Hello and welcome everyone to a mystical journey to the Sacred Sites Global Summit, where we will journey to beautiful sacred sites with healers, shamans, scientists, doctors, wisdom keepers, and coaches to gain wisdom and healing to self, the collective, and our divine Mother Earth. During the course of this event, you will learn that a sacred site is not only an external place or structure, but also our own body. You may have heard of the term, your body is a temple. Therefore, we will also journey inwards to access our internal sacred sites, for example, our sacred heart. You will hear experts talk about their own healing journeys and the work they're doing to raise awareness and consciousness of individuals, the collective, as well as raising the vibrations of our great spiritual mother, Gaia, to create more joy, peace, and abundance for all sentient beings on our beautiful and divine planet, our home. I'm your host and the creator of this event, Ami Sohi. And before we begin, I would like to take this opportunity to thank Jocelyn Starfeather for her tremendous mentorship and guidance during the creation of this summit, without whom I would not be able to present today. I am also very grateful to all my family and friends for their unconditional love and support throughout my journey. And last but not least, I'm very grateful to all of you for taking the time and having the courage to be here today. So thank you. Without further ado, I'm very excited and thrilled to present Adam Apollo. Adam Apollo has offered insights on global transitions, physics, technology, human spirituality, and the future as a next generation leadership ambassador at the White House, in multiple nexus and other summits at the United Nations, and at conferences and festivals around the world. He served as Chief of Business Development for the 2020 Fund and organized two prayer runs for world peace with Indigenous elders and youth from all over North America. He is a co-founder of the Unify Movement, which has reached over 100 million people, and two education and technology-based companies, Access Granted and Superluminal Systems. He is an active faculty member, author, and the lead systems architect for several international online academies, including the Resonance Academy for Unified Physics and the Guardian Alliance Academy for Self-Mastery, with over 140,000 active students of all ages from around the world across these schools. He's been featured on Gaia TV shows, Coast to Coast AM on multiple occasions, feature films, and more. Over the past few years, Adam supported development of new quantum computer-resistant encryption systems with Crown Sterling and advised on many cryptocurrency initiatives. He is now building a decentralized social operating system which has revolutionary 3D Starship dashboard and regenerative impact engine for gamification of planetary transformation. Adam is dedicated to achieving a sustainable and thriving implementary culture. Adam's topic for today is discovering the secrets of our human origins through sacred sites. Welcome, 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 Adam. It's a pleasure and honor to have you here with us today. It's,
Thank
yeah,
you so
thank
much, Ami. It's a pleasure and honor.
Thank you for coming. And you have such amazing knowledge, wisdom in different areas of life, from physics, technology, spirituality, and much more. Gosh, really, really, really impressed. So, I'd like to kick off with a question which is in line
Sure.
with your topic. So, what
Sounds
are your
good.
discoveries in regards to the Incas and the megalithic sites in Peru and Bolivia?
Yeah, well, I've been to a lot of different places around the world, and one of my favorite journeys I did was with a group of around 140 students from the Resonance Science Foundation and Resonance Academy, one of my online schools where I teach unified physics. And we traveled to Peru and also through Bolivia and went to a lot of really amazing sites down there. And some of these sites, I think, are useful for some of your listeners in this adventure and journey to different places to look at, to really understand that the historical narrative that we've been told isn't really the whole truth about these places. And when we start to really get that picture and we understand that picture, then our entire understanding of our history, of who we are, changes dramatically. A lot of the things that we learned in school, as we get a little bit older, we start to realize that not all of that information is the truth, that every bit of teaching that we receive, every academic work comes from a particular perspective, a particular lens. And a lot of the lenses that have forged the history that we know and understand are those generally of colonizing British imperialists who showed up in certain places first, wrote papers, and used their particular lens to understand the site. And that lens needed to fit into, in many cases there, the sort of Christian narrative, going back to the times of the Roman Empire. And if we look in other places like Egypt, which we may talk about later, we have a lot of the Muslim narrative essentially establishing an overlay on the understanding of what's there. Now, you combine that with a little bit of Darwinianism and the idea that, you know, we essentially only get better over time as a species and that we've been evolving this whole time, which is absolutely true, but then sometimes is kind of overly pushed to a point where we believe that every peoples before us are more primitive than us, even if those peoples may have had more advanced technologies, sciences, and awareness in particular areas as a culture. You know, if you take the Maya, for example, which we might also talk about, the Maya had an extraordinarily advanced system of understanding time that not only looks at the rotational facets of time, planetary cycles, solar cycles, but also galactic cycles and the entire precession cycle as the larger form of the way they just simply move through their days in their life. Now that, compared to our current calendar understanding, is extraordinarily more advanced. I mean, in our calendar, we have 30 days and 31 and sometimes 28 and occasionally 29. And we're bouncing around throughout the year trying to figure out how the days of the week connect to the days of the month. And they don't, except for in very specific kind of secret patterns that the Vatican records on dollar bills, you know, that we circle through every year. I mean, I could go on and on, but most people do not really even understand our perspective on time. Most people don't even know what the meanings of the months are. And we all use these meanings across all kinds of, you know, Latin languages, for example. And so just in that one place, we can see a farther advancement in an understanding of time, its cyclical natures and archetypal patterns than we even have today. And when we look at the actual sacred sites, what we discover is that the deep knowledge, wisdom, technology is literally baked into the stone itself. So I will screen share if you'd like to pass the hosting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly.
Great. So the first place that I'd like to take our viewers is down into the areas of Peru and Bolivia and to a very specific site called Ollantaytambo. Ollantaytambo is a site where there are these absolutely massive megalithic stones that are pressed together. And as you can see, they're approximately, you know, 15 to 18 feet tall. They are at least 7 to 10 feet thick. Each one of these stones weighs 150 to 200 tons each. There is literally no slots of space between them at all. They are completely pressed together. And can you guess where these stones come from? They come from the top of that mountain. Actually, just over the other side of the top of this mountain. And there is no trails that you can follow to take these stones down that mountain. And the Incas have a story about a king who was going to impress the gods. Note that term. He's going to impress the gods by going to this ancient quarry and bringing down one of these stones, because there's still some stones just like this up in the quarry that weren't ever brought down. And he brings hundreds of men, and they attempt to bring that stone down the mountain. Well, it's not a very happy ending story, because they couldn't, and the stone went tumbling down the mountain, killing hundreds of people. And this is a story about a man who's trying to become like the gods. So the question becomes, if the Incan king in these stories can't bring the stones down the mountain, and he's trying to impress these gods, who are these gods? Who are the gods that actually built this thing? And interestingly, when you look at the surface of these stones, they're not carved. They're actually embossed. The geometries and patterns, including the chacruna pattern, which you see in the upper left, is actually coming out of the surface of the stone. And the rest of the entire stone is pushed in, almost as if it's stamped, or they carved the entire stone perfectly flat just to allow this beautiful design to emerge from it. This is incredibly advanced technology, and this is extraordinarily hard granite stone. And you can see the way the stone is pressed together. It's almost as if it's molded. You get these fine curves perfectly intersecting between the stones, and each of those fine curves is a mathematical wonder. You literally, it's almost impossible to do this with current machinery today. If we look at some of the other walls and the sites, you can just see the precision. This is laser sharp cuts in these stones. And they form larger wall sections that are absolutely different and distinct from the walls that we see that the Incans built. Walls that Incas built are stones stacked on top of each other, loosely and often kind of like a pile, right? These stones are pressed and ingrained into each other with absolute precision and perfection, such that they all will vibrate if one of them vibrates. So in the right side of the picture you see right now, you see the people looking into the holes on the wall. Each one of those holes is a vibrational chamber. And if you get a group of people and you have them all put their heads into those holes and they vibrate, everyone's sound vibrates into everyone else's chamber and the entire wall resonates. And you can have these incredible overtone and undertones that actually will put you into a deeper conscious state. It's difficult to even describe without doing it yourself. But once you're in there and you actually experience this, it's absolutely phenomenal. And these are not just small stones in some of these sites. Like in Sacsayhuaman, you can see the scale of these stones. Look at one of those people. These are 200 to 300 ton stones placed into position for no reason. There's no defensive purpose. There's no reason to do it for farming. There's literally no reason to do it. And they didn't just do a few stones. They did an entire massive wall complex like this. That means it was easy for them. And the reason that it was built remains a complete and total mystery to our science today. But what we have found in many of these places is an understanding of resonance and vibration that is more advanced than we know now, and a skill of farming that is absolutely mind-blowing, where the entire mountains of the Andes from the bottoms almost to the very top are terraced. These are not Incan terraces. There is enough terraces across Peru and Bolivia to hold civilizations, potentially to feed hundreds of millions of people, which could be the entire planet, could be potentially other planets. So I'll pause there.
Wow, that is absolutely mind-blowing. Yeah, as you mentioned, the technology they must have had at that time to move these stones and to carve them in such precision, you know.
Yes.
And wow, it's just, yeah, mind-blowing.
It's quite stunning to see them and to experience them is like, there really isn't words. Poets are, you know, poetry is the only way.
Wow. And then, as you mentioned, the vibrations, you know, when people are, yeah, standing there, putting their faces in those holes.
That's right.
And what they experience and the vibrations and, oh, wow, it must be out of this world. Yeah.
Life-changing.
Yeah,
certainly life-changing.
Wow, definitely. And you've traveled to Egypt as well, yeah, you mentioned. And have you found any evidence that suggests human connections or ancestry might be how it might be connected to other worlds?
Yes. I mean, that is always the big question that people have is, okay, well, who did build these sites and what did happen and what connections did we have with other worlds? Because we see in all of these locations around the world, and I'll talk about this more as we look at other sites as well, that there are stories about interfacing with sun gods and goddesses or gods and goddesses or, you know, beings that came down and opened up a pool of water or taught people a specific ritual. I mean, even the Lakota tribe in North America, the true stories about white buffalo calf woman. And by the way, I was told these stories by Orville Looking Horse, who carries the white buffalo peace pipe, passed down from Crazy Horse, passed down from the white buffalo calf woman. And I've smoked this white buffalo peace pipe with him and held Sweat Lodge with him. And he told me that white buffalo calf woman is Star Nation. They call her Star Nation. And it's a very well-known fact among a lot of indigenous elders. And I worked with many in my prayer runs for world peace. I worked with the Maori. I worked with Great Lakes tribes. I worked with Wasak, who used to be Hopi. I've worked with, you know, West Coast United States tribes, as well as international groups, Aboriginals. And in all of this work that I've done, I've tended to be curious and ask them, well, you know, what are your perspectives on Star Nations? Because other indigenous elders I've talked to talk about them, and they usually smile and they kind of nod at me and they say something like, you know, we don't talk about that to most people because the most people in this world don't understand this. But for us, Star Nation is a normal thing. It's our ancestors. It's where we came from. These are our connections to other worlds and to other beings and to ourselves. And they're straight up about that. And yet, you know, we don't as a culture listen to that as a true story. We in westernized culture particularly like just to say, yeah, that's your mythology, right? So it's really fascinating when we start to actually see some of what is really going on around there here, because for example, in Paracas, Peru, we've been able to actually recover mummified remains that are quite fascinating. And this was on the student expedition that we took. And so Nassim Haramain, my colleague, managed to secure some of these sealed mummies to do carbon dating on the bone and the hair samples, and also genetic analysis on the muscle and brain tissues. And so this was transported, a mummy was transported to a clean room, and samples essentially were taken and then sent to major universities for study. So these skulls date back thousands of years, and they have DNA base pair changes that are not the result of random gene mutation. In other words, these mummies have these elongated skulls, and it's not from some just random human like mutation. The independent analysis from university showed high frequency variation in gene regulatory regions, which very strongly suggests a differentiation in species. It's a different species than human. So then William Brown of the Resonance Science Foundation, he found massive genetic insertions and deletions, which very strongly differentiate this mummy from modern humans. And these large-scale changes to the protein coding regions of the DNA again suggest this couldn't have just been like edited or mutated in some drastic way. This is very, very likely a sister species to humanity and not humans. So this South American skull, it showed a specific haplotype that matches the Black Sea region of Central Asia, and that's essentially in the mother lineage of this being. So it looks like the mother line, the maternal line, points to this skull coming from the Black Sea region. Now, just note that, first of all, that that is in the middle of Europe and Asia, right? It's essentially in the Middle East, and this is a skull that was found in Peru, right? So that's the first very interesting fact. And then the second thing is that we tried looking at over 30 million different sequence types for the Y chromosome, which is the father line, the paternal line, and there was zero matches to any human genetic group. And we believe that this is definitive evidence that the paternal lineage of this being is not human and most likely not from this planet. Now, if that sounds far-fetched, Dr. Francis Crick, who literally won the Nobel Peace Prize for his work on DNA, along with Orgel and along with a woman who was amazing and formative in that research and that study, Francis Crick actually proposed in the last paper he ever published, I believe it's the last one. This is his like final life work to give to the world. And his paper says, it is nearly undoubtable that life came to Earth at different times, and that evolution has been both happening on this planet as well as with directed panspermia, or life traveling here from other worlds and influencing the development of life on this planet in one of any thousand of different ways. And unfortunately, mainstream scientists thought, well, old Crick just went crazy. He's nuts now. So we're not going to take this evidence and we're going to just throw this paper out the window. And just like Einstein, who wrote one of his final papers about the fact that the ether exists, that general relativity would not exist without a fundamental energetic field as part of space-time. And everybody ignored that paper too. And this is the reality of the academic world, is that sometimes the most important ideas are completely dismissed when they don't match the status quo.
Very interesting. I don't know. Well, our schooling, when I look back at my schooling years, as you mentioned at the beginning, it's not the whole truth. We haven't, unfortunately, been told the whole truth. And I just feel like the new generation, my son, for example, he's 15 at the time, and he doesn't agree with the school system. I feel he feels something that is not the entire truth. So let's hope that going forwards we unravel the truth and discover who we really are, where we come from. I mean, it's just incredible.
It has to happen. I mean, we've got to, because we can't keep telling ourselves the same narrative story, based on ideas from 100 years ago. Like, we need to update that with our understanding now. And we didn't have, when these sites were looked at 100 years ago, we did not have the engineering, the science, or any of those abilities to be able to actually look at these sites and seriously consider were they built with hammer and chisel? You
Yeah.
know, and does that make any sense? And these, you know, this proof from this skull in Peru, this is just one tiny little drop, and it just happened to be mummified remains, and it was only from a couple thousand years ago. A lot of what we're pointing to with these different sites is that there was an entire planetary civilization going on 13,000 years ago, prior to the end of the last ice age. And a lot of these very, very high technology stone-built sites with resonant technology built into them, vibrational sound-based technology, are likely from this advanced civilization at that time, which many people refer to as Atlantis. That's just, you know, a name from Plato passed down from ideas and whatever. And that contains a fraction of the truth of that whole civilization that existed at that time. And we're finding more and more evidence of that all around the world. Graham Hancock, who's a good friend of mine, just released a Netflix series, Ancient Apocalypse. It's absolutely worth watching. He doesn't even talk about the pyramids in Egypt because he wanted people to understand, look at all of these places that point to this ancient story and narrative, which is part of our human history. And for God's sakes, you know, the archaeologist should just at least open their mind to these ideas and consider that maybe we don't have all of the proof and all of the evidence. And a lot of archaeologists who actually live and work at these sites, they agree that the stories do not add up. And they know it because they've been there all this time looking at them, like, yeah, that doesn't make sense, you know? And all it takes is going with a group of people, and suddenly, you know, with us, for example, and I feel these sites so deeply. I have these powerful consciousness experiences when I'm in them, and I'm helping students test out these resonant cavities. And the next thing we know, we've just discovered there's a whole harmony of music built into a stone wall, and the whole thing's vibrating and lighting up, or the King's Chamber or places. And the archaeologists who are with us are mind blown. They had no idea that these sites could do this. Absolutely none. And just that right there tells you, yeah, guys, sorry, the story is not complete yet.
Yeah, it's yeah, we need more people like yourself, you know, to unravel the truth of yeah, of where we're really from and how powerful we actually are,
Yes,
you know, when we discover
exactly.
who the truth of who we are.
Deeply.
Well, I know you mentioned a little about Mexico and Maya, the Maya civilization. What are some insights about the Maya and their sacred sites that might be important to our listeners?
Yeah, well, and the Maya are of particular interest in this conversation because essentially the Maya tell a story about where we came from. And the Maya in their story about reality, and I'll share again because this one's kind of interesting to see. They share that the four corn people of the earth came from the four corners of the river in the sky. And when they talk about the river in the sky, what they're always pointing to is the Milky Way galaxy. They're talking to about the belt of stars that flows like a river across the sky. And we know that's what they mean because when they show it and articulate it, they also put planets crossing it on the ecliptic. They show the path of the sun and the way that it crosses the river. And so this is very clear and well-known knowledge. You know, archaeologists all know this. Again, it is just that it's generally considered to be a mythological construct, right? However, the detail that the Maya put into this level of understanding is quite clear when you begin to actually explore some of these sites. Many of the sites, like Teotihuacan, for example, have been rebuilt over 8 times. So the stone that you see is not the giant megalithic stone that used to be there. And this area, throughout all of the Yucatan and Mexico, most of these sites are in areas that have a lot of water. They have a lot of erosion. You can imagine 13,000 years of heavy erosion being pretty impactful on these places, which is why they've been built over and built over and built over. And many of them are approximations of what they used to be, right? Or the best reconstruction that we could do, but with small stones, because nobody could build it the way the original stones were done deep down under the surface. It's my guess that underneath a lot of these small stones, you would find the same large megalithic structures that we see in all of these other sites. And the sheer scale and size of these pyramids also suggests extraordinarily strong architecture going into the whole thing and heavy duty stonework. So a lot of these sites also have hidden underground tunnel networks where water flow is, and we find parallels to those underground water networks in Egypt as well. And the sites are not just they're not just temples. They're not just there for some sacrifices. Most of them are timekeeping systems, calendrical systems, compass systems that measure solstices, equinoxes, and different time cycles and different parts of the precession cycle. And Mayan time science, as I mentioned before, is extraordinarily advanced. I mean, it's a 260-day archetype map that rotates through the year and comes into perfect synchronization with itself every 52 years. And it's based on patterns of 13 and 260 or 1320. And, in playing cards, for example, that we use are four sets of 13, which gives us 52 cards in a playing card deck, right? Well, each of those 13 in the playing card deck represents one of the seasons of the year. The hearts are the flowers of the spring. The clubs are the tree of the summer. The diamonds are the wealth of the cultivation of the fall. And the spade is the winter tree, is what it looks like, an evergreen tree, but also represents the sword. And interestingly enough, that the cycle of 13 into 52 is also connected to the Tuatha De Danann in the European continent. It's connected to ancient Egyptian magic and Kabbalah and Hermeticism. So, how are the deepest layers of the time science of the Mayan peoples in Central America interconnected to these wisdom traditions and ancient secrets of mythological stories in other cultures all around the world? And that has always been my driving question, because I could see and feel that all of these things point to a much more advanced civilization. Now, I'm not just pulling all these ideas out of, my booty, because I've actually spent time with Mayan day keepers. I had fire ceremonies with Tata Apolinario and Tata Eric Gonzalez, and I learned from them and asked them a lot of questions about Mayan time science and its understandings. And there is incredibly deep wisdom within these systems. And it all comes back to these universal sacred number patterns and geometric patterns that are connected to reality itself. And I talk about a lot of those patterns and a lot of that work in my unified physics presentations, where I talk about, how space-time is structured, how it's made, how consciousness relates to it, and how it can be leveraged for advanced technological development in the next phases of our journey as a species.
Wow, beautiful. Yeah, it's interesting how you say that all these different cultures, ancient cultures, are all interconnected. The Mexican, the Maya, through Peru, and then Egypt. There's so much connection in all those.
That's
And
right.
you mentioned Graham Hancock. I recently watched his documentary. It was, oh my goodness. It was
Yeah, amazing.
mind-blowing, and how he also mentions that there are more pyramids underneath, the ones that we see when we go to these sacred sites. And yeah, there's just so much knowledge. and wisdom underneath as well. Yeah,
That's right.
Deep below. Yeah.
Yeah.
The earth. Wow, it's just amazing. So what's another ancient culture that carries mysteries of our past that are important to unravel, in your opinion?
Yeah. Sure. I'd say that one of the ones that I find to be really fascinating, and I talk about a lot of different cultures in these presentations, and get into, everything from the Vimanas in India, which were like flying ships, to Amazonian art, that goes back to essentially showing star nations coming down, talking to people, collaborating with people, giving people medicines, and the lessons there, to medieval art showing ships in the sky and connections with beings, and some of these things, to Tibetan Buddhism, which has extraordinarily advanced astronomical mapping systems that weren't supposed to be available to the people at the time that they were created. But I also come across, a lot of people that are essentially in my lineage or my culture. I'm half Irish. And so I know, my Irish friends and the people that I've met who are Irish and from the same lands as me or their families were, most of them think that St. Patrick's Day is like the Irish thing, right? It's like every year we get to celebrate being Irish in St. Paddy's Day, and we wear green, and it's all about four leaf clovers and leprechauns and drinking Guinness beer and watching sports or something, right? As if that's what Irish is. But it's extraordinarily sad to me, because celebrating St. Patrick to celebrate the Irish is like, celebrating the Roman Empire, eradicating cultures across Europe, or celebrating the destruction of the Native American peoples on North America from colonization. And because St. Patrick was known as the guy who chased the snakes out of Ireland, well, what he's referring to is not actually snakes. They weren't snakes. They were the ancient cultures, the people, and their understandings of the serpent, the dragon, the secrets of the land, the nature of ancient magic, druidry, et cetera, et cetera. And so I have had quite a journey by hanging out with indigenous elders from around the world. It was always fascinating, because I have past life memories as a Lakota, but in this lifetime, I'm in a white body. And I'm the only white kid with all of these indigenous youth, and trying to show up and lead and support and run and do the thing, but experiencing, to some extent, racism towards me was a deep learning process for me as a young man, and understanding why those judgments exist, and also really wanting to understand, what is my culture now in this time? What is my ancestral culture and lineage? Because none of my family knows what it is. And I dug my way back until I started to find keys to that lineage. And it started with the Druids and Celtic knotwork. And then I kept pulling those threads, so to speak, back to ancient Irish and the Celtic peoples, all the way back to a story about a people that arrived in the British Isles called the Tuatha De Danann. And the Tuatha De Danann were said to have arrived on the British Isles riding clouds. And they came in riding these clouds, and they landed on the Iron Mountain, which is a mountain near one of the coasts. And they brought with them four sacred treasures from the three islands in the sky. And this is the original story of the Tuatha. Now, archaeologists over the years have gone, well, it must have been they burned their ships so that they couldn't go back home. Why would you do that? And then, well, I don't know what they meant by landing on the Iron Mountain. Maybe they went and hiked them to the top of the mountain right after they landed to kind of make a base, or to see the lands or something, right? They come up with all of these ways to retranslate the words of the original script and make it fit their idea of what it should be. But when I found the stories of the Tuatha, it was so beautiful and amazing because I realized that so many of the keys to knowledge and the directions and the elements and specific magical tools that I've had as a deep part of my connection to my spirit in this lifetime, including swords, or one of the biggest ones, chalices, sacred cups. I have, you know, these beautiful old brass grails that I keep around my house, and even Tibetan singing bowls I consider to be a chalice, the, you know, hand hammered metal ones, and staves. I always have staves. I have like a whole bunch of staves, and I have a whole bunch of crystals or stones, sacred stones. And this has always just been there since I woke up as a deep part of how I could connect to my spirituality and express it. And when I looked at the Tuatha De Danann and realized that the four sacred treasures are essentially the chalice or the cauldron of the Dagda, right? The spear of fall, or also known as the staff or the stave. And by the way, the chalice is the same thing as cups in the tarot, is the same thing as hearts in that other form of deck, right? Staves or spears is the same as clubs, which is the summer in the regular playing cards. And then stones are known as pentacles, crystals, stones, pentacles, diamonds in the playing cards, right? Which represents the fall and the harvest. And then the sword of light of Nuada, which is representative of this sacred ancient sword that disappears from history, reemerges for a time as Caliburn, and then disappears again until we find the papers of the Bristol Merlin, which point to a sword that's roughly described as Excalibur, and stories are told about it later as a sword of integrity and a sword of truth, you know, and that the bearer had to be in integrity to wield it. Otherwise it wouldn't work. And this is such a beautiful and ancient tradition, and it's connected to the elves, because these beings were considered to be fae or elven peoples, a little bit slightly pointed ears, you know, white skin, kind of almond shaped eyes. And most of my Irish or, you know, friends, relatives, et cetera, we all look a little bit like elves, you know, it's just kind of always been there. And when you look at some of the other cultures across Norway, Denmark, Finland, they have over 50 different names for different kinds of elves. It's absolutely baked into the heart and the root of their cultures. And I was able to trace different things from different research in my own world to find that I believe that J.R.R. Tolkien's stories in The Lord of the Rings, he created a language from nothing. And I believe that language that he created was the Elven language, which was actually related to ancient Gaelic and related to the Tuatha De Danann and this other culture on this other world. He was a linguist. He wasn't an author. That's the way he went. That he was crafting a language and started hearing the stories of those people in his head and telling those stories. And I don't think that these kinds of things are coincidences. The sites of the Tuatha De Danann and a lot of the sacred sites around Ireland and the British Isles are absolutely stunning with their astronomical complexity, their ability to track cycles and time. And it is fascinating that still to this day, the legends of, you know, the story of Excalibur and the Holy Grail, which is essentially the sacred chalice that gives eternal life, right? Well, the cauldron of the Dagda was the cup that could never be emptied. It was a giant chalice that would feed an army forever. It would just generate new food, like a Star Trek replicator, right? And the stone, the sacred stone of these people, we hear it described in other stories and other cultures, because this stone could control the weather. It could change the structure of objects. It could move things. And we see those same kinds of stories as stories about the Ark of the Covenant or the Black Sunstone that many metaphysical traditions and secret orders have talked about for, you know, literally over 1,000 years. And so we see in this true story, these true cultural narratives that are at the root of an indigenous people, you know, indigenous to where? Well, are any humans truly indigenous to Earth? Well, that's always an interesting question, but at least for any peoples that have lived in a place for 10,000 years, you can say they're pretty indigenous to that area. And for the indigenous Irish and the people that were there long before, you know, a lot of the things got messy with the French and the English, you know, later on, and the Christian Church and the Roman Empire, these are the stories of our true heritage. And I think that is beautiful and important for us to recognize in order to heal ourselves and to become better people on this planet.
Wow, beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, wow, that's really, really amazing to hear about your story, your lineage, and wow, yeah, that is incredible. Wow, I could, go on listening to you, but I'm cautious of the time, so we are coming to a close. I know you have a free gift, right, to offer the audience. Can you share a little bit about your free gift, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have an academy that's active that's called the Guardian Alliance. And the Guardian Alliance is really a school of self-development and self-mastery. We have a whole vast series of programs, and the initial program, the initiation course, is actually free. And what it does is it will guide you into a deep understanding of the juncture that we're at right now in time, and how important it is to actually look at the deep archetypal gifts that we have inside of us to be able to step into our power, to step into our gifts, and really be of service to each other, the world, and the planet. So I believe you have a link from me, and that link will take you to a page that just expresses a little more about what this adventure is. We've had about 7,000 students come through this particular academy. It's a smaller one, but it's very special. And it's one that I think it really requires people to actually, you know, be willing to step up into their power to go through it. And not everybody makes it through all those courses. But the few that do come out, and their lives are very, very different from when they started. And some of the best students I've had come through those courses are now my colleagues that I work with, that I'm creating systems with, because they deeply understand how to work on themselves, how to clear shadow, how to address conflict, how to disarm, how to manifest, how to create, how to navigate all this crazy information and disinformation. They're Jedi. And personally, I like to work with Jedi.
Wow, that's beautiful. Yeah. So
thank you.
Everyone, please check out Adam's website. Click on the link. It's available below the interview. So do go ahead and check out the free gift, claim the free gift that Adam's offering the world. So just amazing. If you're looking for transformation, you know, transmutation, please do check out what services Adam has to offer. So Adam, are there any last final words for our audience? You know, have you got any messages for the world from these sacred sites? You've been to many sacred sites. What messages do you have for us from these sites?
Well, one of the most, I believe, important lessons that I've learned from these places is that we are bodies of vibration, and that our thoughts vibrate our bodies, our voice vibrates our bodies, our words vibrate our bodies very strongly. So even if, you know, you're confused in your thoughts and you're not sure what you want to be or what you want to create or what you want to do in the world, speak what you want. Speak with your intention, with your clarity. Speak with your heart focused on how can I be good? How can I make this good? How can I speak well of people even when I am judging them and maybe need to put some judgment and discernment there because for my own health, or my own, sanity. Even when we have to speak harshly about things, can we appreciate them at the same time? The power of the voice, the power of our word is the great power that these ancient peoples were trying to show us and surface for us. That if we can sing and resonate and be in the sonic wisdom that exists between us, the field where language itself transcends, and we actually recognize that the universal language is actually just the music of our souls and who we are, we can bridge across cultures. We can welcome and deeply fall in love with every language, every way of speaking, every way of being. And when we speak to ourselves or we speak what we wish in the world, may our words be precise to the truth that we are creating and the honesty within us of what has already been created, owning and acknowledging every moment of our existence and speaking into being that which we truly wish to be on this planet.
Wow. Thank you. Beautiful way to close the conference. So thank you everyone for attending, and yeah, I wish you all love and peace and a beautiful rest of the day. Thank you. Goodbye.
Aloha.